hands. Who did their homework that he assigned? Now remember, the truth matters. Who did their homework that he assigned? No, I won't make you show your hands. But there was some homework assigned. Can somebody remind us what we were supposed to read over this past week? Proverbs 11? I didn't do that one.
There were two. Proverbs 11.
Yeah. I did something from Genesis.
That was it.
Okay. Who can remind us what chapters we were supposed to read from Genesis? 42 through 45. Okay.
Did you read it?
I did.
Wasn't it an exciting story?
It was very exciting. If you missed it, then read it this week. But for those of you that didn't read it, it's the exciting but true tale of Joseph and his brothers and how Joseph was in just the right place at the right time to accomplish something amazing. And in, some might argue that his brothers were also in the right place at the right time. So if you didn't read Genesis 42 through 45 this past week, do it today. In fact, it's available on YouTube. Somebody else will read it to you if you don't like reading. That's what I did. So for today, we're going to pick up another story that's about somebody being in the right place at the right time. Another true story. But before I do that, from the Bible, I want to share another more recent story about somebody being in the right place at the right time. In 1974, a chemist named Spencer Silver was working at 3M. He was attempting to create a super strong adhesive. Now, I don't know what he was planning to do with that super strong adhesive, but with a name like Spencer Silver and a chemist working on a super strong adhesive, it sounds to me like this is the beginning of a superhero movie, and this Spencer Silver just might be the supervillain. Well, even though old Spencer intended to create one thing, turns out he accidentally developed a low-tack reusable adhesive. Some would say Spencer was a failure. Several years later, another 3M employee by the name of Art Fry recalled Spencer's adhesive on one occasion when he was particularly frustrated that his bookmarks kept falling out of his hymnals while he was trying to sing in the church choir. So Art Fry applied this low-tack adhesive that Spencer Silver had created to some scraps of paper and invented what we now know as Post-it notes. So one person's failure turned out to be something actually pretty good, and now Post-it notes and their generic versions are sold all throughout the world. Pretty much everybody has used them in the office setting or to mark your place for where you're going to speak from. You've all been given a post-it note in your hymnal to remind you of the story of how they were invented. And you can use those post-it notes to mark your place somewhere or take notes on the sermon if you'd like. All of my sermon notes for the remainder of everything I'm going to say are included on this one post-it note, so you know you can fit them as well. You can fit notes. So God works in mysterious ways, but never by accident. That's my opinion anyway, based on my understanding of Scripture. There's some examples of this. God is described as knitting us together in our mother's womb. Knitting is not something that's easy for people to just do without thinking about. It takes practice, it takes effort to knit something together that is useful. Michaela enjoys crocheting. Yesterday she told us that she's working on crocheting a hat for someone. It's right now it looks just like about a 20-foot long string, but someday it'll be a hat, says she. It takes practice to get those detailed things put together with yarn. Jeremiah 29:11 says, and we've read this before, let's turn there, Jeremiah 29:11. Jeremiah 29:11 in the NIV says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." God has plans for us. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 9. Let's turn there also. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 9. In his heart, a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. In his heart, a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. So in other words, a man may set out that this is where I'm headed, but God directs the individual steps to get there. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 and 16. Let's read that one. Ephesians chapter 5. Verses 15 and 16. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. Verse 17 is good too. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. And finally, one last verse that's going to lead us into where we're going to stay for the rest of our time together today is in the book of Esther, chapter 4. Verse 14. Esther chapter 4, verse 14. And we'll come back to who is saying this and why in a little bit, but read with me in your head Esther chapter 4, verse 14. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this. For such a time as this. That's the title of today's message. For such a time as this. And we're going to look at the book of Esther and the story of Esther. Like the story of Joseph and his brothers, Esther is a story about being in the right place at the right time. And saving an entire nation. Let's look at the who, what, where, when, and why of Esther. Some of the main characters here are a king named Xerxes, a queen named Esther, who was a Jew, a man named Mordecai, and a man named Haman, and some other advisors that were filling in the gaps. When was this written? Well, a few weeks ago, we heard about a story from the book of Daniel. Daniel took place in around 605 BC, about 600 years before Jesus' birth. Joseph, the story that we read about this past week, that story took place about 1706 BC, so about 1700 years before Jesus' birth. This story of Esther took place about 479 BC, so just not quite 500 years before Christ. So that kind of gives us a timeline. Joseph, 1700, Daniel, 605, Esther, 479. Where was this taking place? Xerxes was the king over many provinces from India to Kush. We find that in Esther chapter 1, verse 1. It says he was the king, ruled over 127 provinces stretching from India to Kush. So in the general area of Persia. I've highlighted some of the important parts of Esther to help understand the story. So just a few verses, almost all of them are important, but we're not going to read all of them today, but I would invite you to do that as homework this week. Add it on to what you didn't do last week. Genesis 42 through 45 was assigned last week. Read that if you haven't, and then read the book of Esther. It's 10 chapters. But it's really only about 5 pages or so. So it's something you can do. But let's read through some of the highlights here. I'll be reading from the NIV. I'd encourage you to follow along in your Bible, whatever version you like. I'm starting in Esther chapter 1, verse 1. This is what happened during the time of Xerxes. The Xerxes, who ruled over 127 provinces, not to be confused with the other Xerxes you might have been thinking about. The provinces stretching from India to Kush, verse 2. At that time, King Xerxes reigned from his royal throne in the citadel of Susa. That's like the capital city where his palace was, in Susa. And in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his nobles and officials, the military leaders of Persia and Media. Now, this is not the media like Fox News and CNN. This is the nation, the land of Media. The princes and the nobles of the provinces were present. Verse 4. For a full 180 days, he displayed the vast wealth of his kingdom and the splendor and glory of his majesty. When these days were over, the king gave a banquet lasting 7 days in the enclosed garden of the king's palace for all the people, from the least to the greatest, who were in the citadel of Susa. I'm going to skip ahead a few verses to verse 8. By the king's command, each guest was allowed to drink in his own way. That made me think of, what's the movie where they do this, what do they call it, the silly walk or something? He's a famous comedian, from... Anybody know what I'm talking about? Help me out. I should have looked it up. He's from England. They do a wacky walk or something, a silly walk. I don't know. Somebody knows what I'm talking about. Somebody will help me. I'll figure it out, and I'll tell you next time I talk to you. Anyway, people are allowed to walk in their own wacky way in the movie, and then... So in this story, it just kind of made me smile that it says, by the king's command, each guest was allowed to drink in his own way. Like, how many ways are there to drink? I know when Hannah gets a hiccup, she tries to drink upside down. And so I don't know. It's fun to imagine what ways were they drinking. I think it means what they were drinking, but anyway. Verse 9, Queen Vashti, now this is Xerxes' wife, Queen Vashti also gave a banquet for the women in the royal palace of King Xerxes. On the seventh day, when King Xerxes was in high spirits from wine, he commanded the 7 eunuchs who served him, and it gives their names, but we'll skip that and go to verse 11, to bring before him Queen Vashti wearing her royal crown in order to display her beauty. Let's look at the second half of verse 12. Queen Vashti refused to come. The king became furious and burned with anger. Verse 13. Since it was customary for the king to consult experts in matters of law and justice, he spoke with the wise men who understood the times. Verse 15. What must be done to Queen Vashti? He asked. Verse 16, a guy named Memucan, but I think it's more fun to remember his name like Manucan, even though it's an M in the middle, because here's what he says. Manucan, he's giving King Xerxes what he can do. So Memucan said, Queen Vashti has done wrong, not only against the king, but also against all the nobles and the people of the provinces of King Xerxes. The queen's conduct will become known to all the women, and so they will despise their husbands and say, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she would not come. Look at the tail end of verse 18. There will be no end of disrespect and discord. Verse 19, if it pleases the king, let him issue a royal decree and let it be written in the laws of Persia and Media, which cannot be repealed. If ever you get into a position where you're able to make laws, I suggest that you don't make a law that can't be repealed, because every time somebody does this in the Bible that I can ever find, things don't go well. But that seems to be how they did things back then. They wanted to make laws that could not be repealed. It makes me think of when people sometimes ask the question, can God make a boulder so heavy that he can't lift it? Can a king make a law so airtight that he can't repeal it? So if it pleases the king, let him issue a royal decree and let it be written in the laws of Persia and Media, which cannot be repealed, that Vashti is never again to enter the presence of King Xerxes. Also, let the king give her royal position to someone else who is better than she. Then all the women will respect their husbands, from the least to the greatest. Verse 21. The king and his nobles were pleased with this advice. Verse 22. He sent dispatches to all parts of the kingdom, to each province in its own script and each people in its own language, proclaiming in each people's tongue that every man should be ruler over his own household. Xerxes, Xerxes, Xerxes. Chapter 2. Later, when the anger of King Xerxes had subsided, verse 2, the king's personal attendants proposed, "Let a search be made for beautiful young virgins for the king. Let the king appoint commissioners in every province of his realm to bring all these beautiful girls into the harem at the citadel of Susa." Verse 4, "Then let the girl who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti." This advice appealed to the king, and he followed it. Verse 5. Now there was in the citadel of Susa a Jew of the tribe of Benjamin. Now remember last week we were talking about those sons of Israel. There were 12 of them. One of them's name was Benjamin, and those 12 sons became tribes of Israel. So this Jew was one of the descendants of Benjamin, and he was named Mordecai. Verse 6. He had been carried into exile from Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. We learned about King Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon. When was that? When did that happen? What? How long before this? Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel 605, and now we're in approximately 479, so about 100 years later. Mordecai, verse 7, Mordecai had a cousin named Hadassah, whom he had brought up because she had neither father nor mother. This girl, who was also known as Esther, was lovely in form and features, and Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother died. We aren't told how they died, but it might have had something to do with them being in a foreign land. Maybe people were oppressing them. We don't know for sure, but Mordecai took care of Esther, whose name was, her Jewish name was Hadassah. Verse 9. Let's look at the tail end of verse 8. Esther was taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Haggai, who had charge over the harem. Verse 9. The girl pleased him, talking about the king Xerxes, and won his favor. He provided her with beauty treatments and special food. Verse 10. Esther had not revealed her nationality and family background. Verse 12. Before a girl's turn came to go into King Xerxes, she had to complete 12 months of beauty treatments prescribed for the women, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 with perfumes and cosmetics. Anything she wanted was given to her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. Verse 14. In the evening she would go there, and in the morning return to another part of the harem to the care of one of the eunuchs. Right before verse 15, let's look at the end of 14. She would not return to the king unless he was pleased with her and summoned her by name. There in verse 16, then it says that Esther won the favor of everyone who saw her. In verse 17, now the king was attracted to Esther more than to any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any of the other virgins. So he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen. So here's the setup. Vashti made the king mad because he didn't She didn't want to come and be beautiful for all his friends to look at. And because she didn't come to his party, she was no longer queen. It doesn't say that she was killed, but I have a suspicion that that might have happened. I don't know for sure. But she certainly wasn't queen, and she wasn't allowed to even see the king anymore, be in his presence anymore. Esther is chosen out of all the beautiful ladies that they can find anywhere in the reign of the king. She's chosen. She happens to be a Jew. Let's go a little bit faster here now. Verse 21. Mordecai was sitting in the king's gate. And two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway became angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. But Mordecai found out about the plot and told Queen Esther, who in turn reported it to the king, giving Mordecai the credit. And when the report was investigated and found to be true, the two officials were hanged on a gallows. And all this was recorded in a book of the annals in the presence of the king. After these events, King Xerxes honored Haman. Now, we don't really know much about Haman before this, but he was apparently one of the officials of King Xerxes, and Xerxes decided to honor him. And he elevated him and gave him a seat of honor higher than that of all the other nobles. Chapter 3, verse 2 is where I'm at. All the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor. Now, all these kings and leaders that were over Israel as they were captive in various places, they had this big hang-up of people not kneeling down when they were supposed to. Remember that from Daniel? So, if there's a couple things we can learn from these Old Testament stories, it's if you ever get to make a law, don't make it so you can't repeal it. And be careful about making laws where people have to bow down to people, because usually the people that make those laws come out on the wrong end of things with God. Let's look at verse 4. Day after day, officials spoke to Mordecai and asked him, "How come you're not bound down to Haman?" But he refused to comply. Therefore, they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated. It reminds me of kids tattling. Like, do you know that Carter's doing this? Is that going to be tolerated? So they're all kneeling down, but Haman's not. So they go and Mordecai is not, so they go and tell Haman. What did Haman do? Let's look at chapter 3, verse 6. Haman looked for a way to destroy all Mordecai's people, the Jews. Not just Mordecai, he wanted to kill all the Jews. Sound familiar with modern times? Verse 8, then Haman said to King Xerxes, "There is a certain people dispersed and scattered among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom, whose customs are different from those of all the other people, and who do not obey the king's laws. It is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them, and I will put 10,000 talents of silver into the royal treasury for the men who carry out this business." Reminds me a lot of Judas putting some and trading some money for people's destruction. You might think the king would say, "Well, that doesn't sound like a good idea because I'm married to a Jew and she's my favorite queen of all." He didn't know that at the time. He was more concerned with the beauty than finding out who Esther's God was or what her heritage was. Be careful, young men, as you're considering a queen for your palace. Sometimes there's more important things than beauty to be looking at. What did he do, though? King Xerxes, in verse 10, took the signet ring from his finger and gave it to Haman, the enemy of the Jews. Verse 11, keep the money, the king said to Haman, and do with the people as you please. Verse 13, dispatches were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces with the order to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the Jews, young and old, women and little children, on a single day, the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar. Now, this is not December. The Jewish calendar, the calendar they were using at the time was different than where we're at right now, but this was probably around March, was what I can find out as I've studied this. On the 13th day of March is when every Jew is going to be destroyed. But this order went out in the first month. That says that in verse 7. So they got almost a whole year to get ready. This reminds me of when Pritzker was making rules about COVID, and he would give us like a month or so to, like, next month or on the beginning of the month, then we're going to have to start wearing masks again. Like, if it was a good rule, why didn't they enact it right when he thought of it? But I don't understand why they decided to wait a month before they were going to wipe out the Jews if it was a good idea to begin with. But that's what their plan was. And so to summarize what was happening next is the Jews had a long time to think about their destruction. And so some of them are out. In chapter 4, some of them are out wearing sackcloth, which is like burlap, and they're putting ashes on themselves and laying in ashes, and they're wailing and weeping and making it known that their distress. So Esther learns of this, that Mordecai is one of these people that's just really upset, and sends a messenger to ask him, why is he so upset? Because apparently she's the queen, but she doesn't know what the king has allowed to go on. So she goes and she sends a messenger and finds out what has been decreed. Chapter 4, verse 12. When Esther's words, chapter 4, verse 7, Mordecai told the messenger everything that had happened. He even somehow knew about the exact amount of money that Haman had promised to pay for the destruction of the Jews. I don't know how he knew that. He seemed to have very inside information. He knew about the guards that were planning to assassinate King Xerxes, and he told them. He knew about the exact amount of money that Haman was going to pay to destroy the Jews, but yet the queen didn't know about any of this. But he explained to the messengers from Queen Esther why he was so upset. So then Esther gave a message to send back to Mordecai in verse 11. She said, all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that he be put to death. The only exception is for the king to extend the gold scepter to him and spare his life. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. So she's saying, I don't know, maybe my favor with the king is not so good right now. It's been 30 days since he even asked to see me. And if I just go in there uninvited, You know the punishment for that. Everybody knows the punishment for that is death. So how does Mordecai respond? Chapter 4, verse 12. When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. Now who knows? But that you have come to a royal position for such a time as this. For the sake of time as this, we're going to break this message into two pieces. So I'll leave you on a cliffhanger about what does Esther do. You can read it at home this week, but we will explore my thoughts on it another week. Soon. I'm not sure if I'm preaching next week or 2 weeks. So we'll have a week in between and then pick up in 2 weeks where we left off. But I want to leave you with a couple of thoughts. Esther seemed to be in an important place at a significant time. And it may have seemed like she was in the wrong place at the wrong time because, I mean, her whole family's been taken into captivity. She's made to be a queen of this guy that doesn't even really want to see her all that often. It's been 30 days since he last called her. She doesn't know what his plans are. She doesn't even know that he's planning to wipe out all of the Jews. Other people that are just sitting around the city gates understand this better than she does. Sometimes in our life, there's times when we do things for the last time without realizing it. And later we look back and we think about, wow, that was the last time I ever did that thing, and I didn't even think about it. Sometimes we're given opportunities to respond a certain way or to do something significant, and we pass it without even thinking about it. Let me tell you some examples. So those of you that have children that are now no longer in diapers, did you write down in the baby book the last day you ever changed a diaper? No. We might write down when they got their first haircut or when they took their first steps, or maybe if they're the second or third child, they don't even have a baby book. But we certainly don't write down when we changed their final diaper, because we don't know. We don't know when that time is going to be. How about the last time that you called your mother or father mommy or daddy? It just happens over time that we probably all started calling our moms or dads something different than we did when we were little, but it just happens. When's the last time you tucked your child in and said goodnight prayers with them? There were those of us that have had children that have grown up and we don't do those things anymore, then it's like at some point there was an opportunity. That was the final time that you were ever going to say goodnight prayers with your child. And what did you say? Did he even know that that was your last time to do that? How about the last time you played on the playground with a childhood friend? We grew up next to a city park, and there were lots of neighbor kids that we would play with routinely. What were the little boys across the street that they always had to do everything together? Their parents, like if one got invited to a birthday party, the other one had to be invited to the birthday party, or neither one of them could come, that kind of thing. Tommy, I think, Tommy and, I don't know. Anyway, when was the last time we played? We played with them all the time. We rode bikes down the hills. We played on the swings. When was the last time we did that? We don't know. Just, and who knows whatever happened to those kids. But for a time, we played with them every single day. So my point is this, that sometimes we have opportunities to interact with people in a way that is unique, but fleeting. We have opportunity with our children to speak with them in ways and at times that no other person will have the opportunity to speak with them in that way or at that time, when we're tucking them in at night. When they're calling us mommy and daddy, there's an intimacy there that not everybody has the opportunity to share with your children. This whole time we've had this box of waffles and Windex up here. Some of you have been wondering why it's there. Some of you don't care. Does anybody know why it's there? How this relates to the sermon? No one does? Neither do I. I just put them there. And sometimes that's how things are. That seemingly random things pop up in our life and we try to make sense of it, and sometimes there isn't sense of it. Sometimes the answer might be that, well, both of these things start with W, waffles and Windex. And that's the only pattern that there is. Sometimes God puts things into our life, sometimes we put things into our life. Sometimes we try to make a purpose that God has, you know, some great plan for us about every little detail, and sometimes it's just that we put those things there ourselves. Other times it is that maybe for such a time as this, God has put you where you are to have a special influence over someone or something, like Esther. We'll pick up the story in 2 weeks.